This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, April 1st, 2021. It's opening day. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm in my hotel room on Thursday morning in Washington, D.C. And Taylor, you were preparing the rundown for today's show, and it kind of got blown up.
Oh, my gosh. Late last night, I literally hit send, and less than 30 seconds later, I flip over to Twitter. Francisco Lindor is a Met for life. Craziness.
Now, other agents have been predicting in recent days that this was going to happen, that they had to finish it. We're going to be talking about that with Matt Bisgurjian coming up, because they really, the two sides had so much to lose otherwise. And last night, they finished it. 10 years, $341 million with a partial no trade clause. No opt-outs in this deal, and about $50 million in deferred money and a signing bonus of about $20 million. So the Mets get their man. Francisco Lindor gets his contract, and he will be in the Mets lineup tonight for his first plate appearance with the New York Mets. On the other side, the Nationals dealing with some adversity. A player tested positive for COVID-19. Four teammates were on a private plane with him, along with one other staff member. And because they had exposure to that player test positive, that group has been quarantined and they will not be available for opening night tonight. We have not gotten the names of those players yet. Blue Jays outfielder George Springer is headed to the injured list with an oblique strain that happened during spring training. Jed Hoyer, the general manager of the Chicago Cubs, told reporters yesterday he's confident the Cubs will reach an agreement with three-time All-Star Anthony Rizzo. I have my doubts. It does seem like they're far apart in their negotiations. Commissioner Rob Manfred is hopeful for full ballparks in 2021, hoping that he gets something resembling quote unquote normal in the next few months. That is something he said to the Associated Press. President Joe Biden was asked about the no limit on fans in the Texas Rangers ballpark on Monday. He was talking with Sage Steele on SportsCenter. Here's what he had to say.
Well, that's a decision they made. I think it's a mistake. They should listen to Dr. Fauci and the scientists and the experts. I think it's not responsible.
Biden talked generally about where baseball and where society are in relation to the coronavirus.
Well, there's not so much up in the air if we listen. What I was able to do is get over 600 million doses of the vaccines available, the three vaccines. When I announced, I've only been in office a little over 100 days, not quite 100 days. And I announced we're going to make sure we did 100 million shots. We're going to be up to 200 million. We have 600 million vaccinations available. So we have enough to begin to vaccinate everybody in the entire United States. But people have to be responsible. They have to continue in the meantime to wear a mask when they're around someone, but have to wash your hands and keep social distancing. And so it's going to be a little while, but God willing, the way the vaccines are getting out now and the way we're working, I think we ought to be able to, as I set a goal, that by the 4th of July, I'd be able to at least have a small barbecue in the backyard with family. And by the time we get into the fall, hopefully things are moving. I don't think early in the baseball season that's going to happen, though.
So, of course, today, lots of games all day on ESPN. We have four different broadcasts. I'm going to be part of the Nationals and Mets broadcast tonight at 7 p.m. Matt Bisgurjian will be the play-by-play man on that broadcast, and we'll be talking with him in a second. Sarah Langs will stop by to play the numbers game, and I'll ask her which team owns New York in the aftermath of the Francisco Lindor signing. Mark Topkin at the Tampa Bay Times will talk about the Rays as we continue through the American League East previews. But first, I want to tell you also about America's Caddy on ESPN Plus, hosted by Michael Collins. Join the quick-witted, longtime caddy, comedian, and ESPN golf analyst as he interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, part celebrity hangout, and full of laughs. Streaming now on ESPN Plus. And listen to and watch my friend Greeny. He's on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. And you can follow Greeny wherever you listen to podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Matt Chosen, play-by-play man on Sunday Night Baseball for ESPN. Matt will be leading the broadcast tonight as the Mets play the Washington Nationals. I'm down here in Washington. Matt's going to be working from a studio up in Bristol. You must be excited about this.
Yeah, and I know you are too, Buster. We're all excited to get going again. The suggestion 2 or 3 months ago that we would have started on time with a variety of things potentially in the way, I just didn't believe it for a minute to the point where, you know, I was making weekend plans in April because I was convinced we wouldn't be calling games. But I'm so happy that I was wrong, and I'm so happy that we're out there working tonight, and we got a good one, man. I mean, Scherzer and DeGrom, even on a backfield in the Grapefruit League, is fun. But given that it's opening night, it makes it all better.
Yeah, and we'll get to that matchup in a second. A couple things first. We learned from Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Nationals, yesterday that a player on the Nationals tested positive. Four players and a staffer who were on a private plane with that player are quarantined today. They will not be available. We'll find out more information on that later. But I absolutely loved both Rizzo and Max Scherzer. Their attitude when they spoke with the reporters yesterday was like, yeah, well, you know what? So be it. We're just plowing ahead. And I thought, well, that's just baseball. It's 162 games. That's kind of what they deal with all the time.
True. And, you know, the other sports we just watched, we've almost watched an entire college basketball season to completion. The NFL played to completion. And we're just, I think we're conditioned to this now as fans and even the athletes themselves. Look, you're going to have positives. There are going to be outbreaks and you keep moving. And as long as everybody's doing their due diligence and protocols are exercised, you hope that nothing spreads. You know, I, like you, I'm dying to know who those four players are that they're going to be without, because that's potentially storyline changing for opening night. If it's say Trey Turner, Juan Soto, et cetera. So the attitude is commendable, but I don't think we should minimize the impact for the short term.
Last night, we got news about the Francisco Lindor deal. In the last 2 days, Matt, I was talking with agents who don't represent Lindor, and every single one of them was like, yeah, they'll get it done. Don't worry about it. You know, there were pessimistic reports. There's an impasse. And the agents privately were like, nope, they'll finish it. Don't worry about it. Because they felt like that, you know, both sides had too much to lose in this case. That on the Mets side, you had, you know, a team that acquired this player with the idea in mind that he was going to be the centerpiece guy in their team. They clearly were willing to spend a lot of money to re-sign Lindor. And Steve Cohen, in his first run through this sort of situation for fans, had something to prove, which is why I thought Lindor had leverage, but he had a lot to lose too. You know, I had agents estimate that if he actually did decide to forego the contract and go into free agency, if he had a mediocre year, or he got hurt, he might have cost himself $160 to $180 million, which is why the agents were just so confident saying, they'll work it out. Don't you worry. In fact, I had one agent yesterday, Matt, I had a conversation with. He said, it'll be for $340. And I said, you mean $341, because he's going to want to beat Tatis's deal. And he goes, yeah, that's right, $341. And he texted me all like doing a victory lap today because he called it right on the mark. What was your reaction?
Yeah, my reaction was similar to yours. There was no surprise. I fully expected it to get done before opening day, before the first pitch. Steve Cohen would not have been playfully bouncing about on Twitter as he was if he wasn't confident that a deal was imminent, if not already done. And I think this, too. I think this because we've made such a big deal the past couple of years and for right reasons about this decorated class of shortstops that are all hitting the market. You know, when you get news that Lindor signs for 341, the 6 for 120 that the Astros offered Carlos Correa is laughably, I'll say it, offensive based on that number. You've got a player that's younger that probably can move to third base a little more adeptly in his senior statehood than Lindor may be able to. Anyway, we could go down that road all day. I'm not surprised. The magnitude of this is such that every one of these guys, whether it's Story or Baez or Correa, when you're up, when you're the guy who's up and you have the leverage, it's almost like quarterbacks in the NFL. This kind of reminds me of the Dak Prescott situation in that he was up and everybody else has signed for huge money. So if Tatis got 340 and Betts got what he got, I know it's a different position, then you got to pay me. And that's what's happening here. I mean, this deal more than doubles the richest contract in franchise history for the Mets. It makes that David Wright deal 10 years ago look like it was consummated in the 1960s because of the dollars involved here.
You and I have a lot of friends who are Mets fans, and they're my favorite fan base, I think, because they're just so tortured. You know, that phrase, as I said last year, to death do us part, really does apply to Mets fans. And so Steve Cohen came in and there was a lot of excitement and anticipation, but then, man, the hand wringing over the winter when they didn't sign George Springer, like I expected, when they didn't sign JT Realmuto, when they didn't get Trevor Bauer, fans were like, really? The Mets fans were upset, feeling like we should be doing more. When you look at what they've done, they've increased their payroll by about 25%. They traded for one of the best players in baseball, and they just locked him up to the third biggest deal in Major League history. They've improved their infrastructure, not only on their roster, but within their front office, literally, as they've added people around baseball. The change is remarkable. You got a big market team acting like a big market team.
Yes, and it really kind of, I think it punctuates some of the warts of the previous administration. Without getting too deep into the name calling here. And let's face it too, the previous administration was limited in what they could do, but you hit the nail on the head. It's a big market team acting like a big market team. And for any fan that is lamenting the swing and miss at Realmuto, they got a really good catcher, man. Talk to Lucas Giolito about the impact James McCann made on the White Sox staff. They got, I mean, look, they signed more free agent players than any team in baseball. They missed on Trevor Bauer. Everybody would have liked to have had him as a Met fan, but he does come with a lot of extras. And even though there are still some questions around the Mets starting rotation beyond DeGrom, and I understand that, look, the fact that they swung and missed on some of those guys shouldn't bother any Mets fans. This is as good a Mets team that's been on the field since 2015, and nobody expected opening day 2015 to result in a World Series appearance. So yeah, onward and upward for the Mets. They've got a really bright spring and summer ahead.
And tonight, DeGrom versus Scherzer. What do you got on those two guys?
Well, you and I were just visiting about this. I made the calculated mistake last night of staying up too late and looking at Jacob DeGrom video through one of the great resources that we have at ESPN. And when you enter into a search engine, Jacob DeGrom, two strike sliders to right-handed batters, and then a whole screen of video populates, you're just amazed at the command and the potency of this guy. He's basically, Buster, he's a two-pitch pitcher to right-handed batters. Occasional changeup. That's how good his fastball and slider command is. That he had the highest strikeout percentage of any right-handed starter last year to right-handed batters, and he's doing it with a two-pitch mix. You and I have been around long enough to know that whenever a guy is described as a two-pitch pitcher, there's usually this murmur that he's going to end up in a bullpen someplace because he doesn't have the arsenal, the repertoire to go deep three times through the lineup. When your two pitches are as good and as different as his are, he can shape that slider to do just about anything. In fact, there were a few sliders that I watched last night that looked like changeups. I mean, he really is amazing. And I can't wait to watch him work tonight. Same for Scherzer. And the narrative around him being in a contract year, the huge deal he signed that netted a World Series championship that did everything Scott Boras claimed it would do for the franchise, looks like one of the best in modern baseball history. What's next for him? These are two guys who are probably Hall of Famers right now. They're certainly on a Hall of Fame track at worst. And we are really blessed to be able to watch them head to head tonight.
And I'm going to be watching DeGrom's velocity because, as you know, he was clocked as high as 102 in spring training. He increases velocity by 4 miles per hour over 4 years, which is basically unheard of unless you're talking about a starting pitcher transitioning to a bullpen role. You don't see it in starting pitchers. You don't see it in starting pitchers who are in the early 30s. But as Jeremy Hefner told me, I know he probably said to you as well, the Mets pitching coach, this is a case of a player learning how to most efficiently use his body. And also someone who, you know, is a former college shortstop, maybe hasn't used as many bullets as other pitchers have earlier in his lifetime, baseball lifetime. So I'm fascinated by DeGrom and the fact that you mentioned about, you know, doing those search engines. Last year, his slider velocity was 3 miles per hour faster than any other pitcher. That's insane. That is such a huge difference with that sort of weapon.
Yeah. And you do have a hard time sometimes differentiating between his slider and his cutter because the velocity is what you mentioned. I mean, he'll throw that slider 94 miles an hour and it's tight and you really can get fooled. So I'll miss a bunch tonight. I mean, I am positive that I will misidentify a couple pitches. I've got the market cornered in that. But it comes from a good place. I usually try to be as accurate as I can. And by the way, you got to Hefner before I did. And when I asked him the same questions you had asked him, he prefaced everything by saying, well, as I told Buster, and as he's already written about, and I was like, oh, okay, sorry. Let's go on to the next thing. Buster beat me as he does everybody else. Let me just ask you about your golf game then, because I don't think Buster went there with you.
On Sunday night, we are so excited that we get Shohei Ohtani on the mound for his first start of 2021 against the Chicago White Sox. We were all rooting for this. It's going to happen. And of course, the first thing we're all going to be asking as we get closer to that game is, will Joe Maddon forego the DH and put Ohtani pitching and batting second as he did against the Dodgers in the exhibition game the other night?
There is a chance. Joe has been asked that throughout the Cactus League season. He's as transparent as any manager is. And when he tells you he's not sure, but he's still considering it, I think he's being completely honest. And it might not be Sunday, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that sometime. You know, he is coming off of the blister issue, which may, you know, put a temporary governor back on him for the first weeks of the season. But look, it's only happened a handful of times where an American League team has chosen to hit its pitcher in lieu of using the DH spot. Ken Brett did it twice. The most recent example was it was a lineup card issue with Andy Sonnenstein. Joe Maddon on it again. It was the 09 Rays, and they lost their DH because of a lineup card malfunction. And they had to hit Andy Sonnenstein, and he ended up hitting the game-winning double, ironically. So if Ohtani can do this, and he can, and Joe lets it happen, we are all going to be thrilled to watch. And you and I have talked this before, Buster. I really think because the returns have not been as good on the mound for him dating back to last year, and his spring was wonky. He had control issues. The bat plays huge. And we used to talk about Ohtani being limited as a pitcher by his plate appearances as a hitter. I almost think it's the opposite now. I think that he gives you so much upside in your lineup. Using him on the mound becomes the luxury, not the other way around.
I agree with you. And I'm curious to see, especially as dominant as he was at the plate in spring training, and I didn't look at the last game, but I'm pretty sure that he finished spring with 5 homers and 4 strikeouts as a hitter. Think about that. 5 homers and 4 strikeouts that, you know, that's going to be something Joe Maddon will consider as he goes through the year. So it's going to be fun. What a great game we have to start out with tonight. And I'm with you. We'll be crossing our fingers and hoping you know, that some of these guys, maybe there's a false positive and maybe, you know, one or two of them can be in the lineup tonight. But anyway, Matt, thanks for doing this.
You got it, Buster. I'll see you on opening night.
So in preparation for tonight's game between the Mets and the Nationals, Carl Ravitch talked to Max Scherzer for MLB on ESPN Radio, and he asked him about the Nationals missing four players on opening day.
I just think we know how this kind of works better. Yeah, there's less unknowns. We've seen how, you know, 2020 was a good learning experience for all of us, and knowing that, hey, once this starts going, you kind of know how this ends. Whereas, now we have that information. It's not, I would say last year, once you start hearing there's a lot more positive tests going around, that you just felt like it just was way more widespread. You know, hopefully this one is contained as well as we can because of all the protocols we have in place now. And everything that we do, hopefully we contained it and hopefully it's not a big deal.
He asked him about playing through the pandemic in 2021.
It's all weird. Everybody's, this has been the weirdest year ever of dealing with baseball and the pandemic, but it's better than no baseball. So, very, very grateful that we were able to continue to play baseball during this and go out there and compete. I mean, that's the best thing we can do.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, of course, a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, it's well documented on this podcast, probably around the world, that you're a big Mets fan. And what a new era for the Mets, punctuated by this $341 million deal with Francisco Lindor. How do you feel about it, being a Mets fan?
Well, it was very exciting. I was working last night on a late shift for MLB.com, and I'm sitting there getting ready for opening day, and all of a sudden the tweets start flooding in, and, you know, it's really exciting. I mean, I think I was up at MLB Network the day that the Mets and Indians made the trade, and we did our breaking news show right immediately, and I just remember having that conversation about how great of a player Francisco Lindor would be for New York, you know, for so many reasons, his background, his excitement, Mr. Smile, everything else, and getting to see that on the big New York stage. No disrespect to Cleveland whatsoever, but just that this was a chance to really be sort of a franchise changing player. And I think that, you know, now everyone's going to get to see that come to fruition, not just for a few months with the speculation of what's going to happen, but, you know, knowing heading into this season that 11 years of him starting with this year.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 12. So I've been taking a look at, you know, maybe some records that could fall on opening day today. And one thing I was thinking about was, okay, what's the most strikeouts for a Padres pitcher, either in his team debut or on opening day? And listen to this. So on April 8th, 1969, in the first game in Padres history, Dick Celma had 12 strikeouts. That's still stands as the Padres record for most strikeouts on opening day and most strikeouts in a Padres team debut, regardless of whether it was MLB debut or not. So Yu Darvish, 13 strikeouts, he would have this record that has literally stood since the franchise started. I just thought that was crazy.
Number two
is 29. So this one was with Francisco Lindor in mind. So he still hasn't played a regular season game in a Mets uniform, right? We're going to see that. You are there. You're going to see it in person, which is so incredible. And I'm so jealous of that. So excited for you. So there have been 29 players in Mets history to homer in their Mets debut. The most recent was Aaron Altherr on May 24th, 2019. I don't think anyone would be getting that trivia question right. But one player in Mets history had a multi-homer game in his Mets debut, and it's a player who we hear about a lot with the Mets, despite the fact that his career was in the 90s. It was Bobby Bonilla on April 6, 1992.
Number one
is 9. So Albert Pujols entering the final year of his deal here, and there's so many milestones here, meaning with the Angels, of course. There are just so many milestones that he could, you know, accomplish this year. And we know, obviously, he's slowed down. He's not the Albert we saw in 2001, but it's really crazy if you think about just how high up on all of these lists he is or could end up. So 9 is because he could be 9th all time in hits by the end of this season. And that's a very realistic goal for him. He's 14th entering the year. He's very likely to pass Nap Lajoie, Eddie Murray, Willie Mays, Eddie Collins, and Paul Molitor and be sitting there in 9th right behind Carl Yastrzemski. He could also end up within the top 3 in total bases and in extra base hits. And you can already guess the names ahead of him on those: Aaron, Musial, Mays, Bonds, Ruth. But it's pretty incredible if you think about the entirety of that career.
He's an all-time great, no question. All right, I need you to take sides in a little battle that developed this morning on radio. I said early on the morning show at 6 a.m., that there was a chance that the Mets could take over New York, that they could own New York again. They brought Michael Kay on, the voice of the Yankees from the Yes Network, and he was like, pump the brakes a little bit. I made the point, and he acknowledged that, you know, he's right. Although it has felt like a Yankee town for so long, since the dynasty years in the 1990s, the fact is that it's gone back and forth. In 1969, when the Mets won the World Series, they were the biggest team in New York. And then the Yankees won the World Series 1977-78. They took it back, and then they kind of got run into the ground. And then in the mid-80s, the Mets took it back. So do you think there's a chance the Mets, with new owner Steve Cohen, could be the team in New York?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm glad you said that with the history, because my first thought when you were mentioning this is just how my parents always tell me how it was such a Mets town in the 80s. And for me, growing up being a Mets fan, that was like unfathomable, right? If you think of when I grew up, the 2000 World Series, everything else, I couldn't possibly process the concept that the Yankees weren't the team. But I really think, you know, looking at the history, it's certainly possible. And I don't think it's a this year thing. I mean, I think the interesting question is that they play different positions, but now you kind of have Francisco Lindor on one side and Gerrit Cole on another. And those are two outstanding players who are both going to be on their respective teams. For Cole has another, 6 years left. And obviously Lindor has 11. So I think that what wasn't happening when those flip-flops happened in history was both teams having one of those franchise type of players at the same time. So really interested to see what that could merit, because it's not like the Yankees don't have anyone. There's Aaron Judge. I know his contract will be up eventually and everything else, but I just think of Gerrit Cole, Francisco Lindor, and like that's kind of what's going on here.
I love the fact that it feels like a coin flip right now. Whoever wins, whoever does better, if the Mets win the World Series, the Yankees win the World Series, or one of the teams advances to the World Series, it could be their town. So we'll see how that develops. All right, Sarah, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Buster. Happy opening day.
You too. Mark Kopkin covers the Tampa Bay Rays for the Tampa Bay Times. And Mark, the Rays, of course, played deep into the World Series last year. When you look at this team, what's the biggest challenge in your eyes pushing the rock back up the hill?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be figuring out the pitching, Buster. I mean, you know, you take the two top starters out of the rotation in Blake Snell and Charlie Morton. They went for the group approach, the team effort here, quantity over quality, maybe you could say, in signing a couple veteran guys or three veteran guys. They've obviously got some really good young arms, and I think they're just trying to bridge the gap. And there's also the concern that every team has is how will pitchers physically handle going from the 60-game season and the interruption and the restart and all that to the 162-game season.
Do you just mentioning looking back at the World Series last year, you know, that decision with Blake Snell was so drew so much attention because it's a World Series and because it's a national stage. Do you sense any hangover from that? And how much now that we have more time to sort of look back, did that contribute to the decision to trade Blake Snell?
Yeah, I don't think it contributed to the decision to trade Blake Snell. And in fact, if you wanted to actually pick anything, if you wanted to create a reason, it might have, you know, that rant he did before the season started, which really got a lot of attention about he wanted his money and all that. But I don't think that's why the Rays traded Blake Snell. I do think that they eliminated a little bit of what would have been, you know, some noise as far as that question coming up every time they went into a new city and there were, you know, interviews and things like that. So not having Blake Snell on the roster, I don't think that was part of it. As far as a hangover, I wrote a little bit about that in today's Tampa Bay Times, is that I think there's a little bit of, you know, they're trying to wrestle. What's their motivation? Is their motivation was they had a really, really good year last year. If you extrapolate their pace, they would have won 108 games over a full season. They got to game six of the World Series. Or is it, man, you got that close and you lost, and who knows when you're ever going to get there again. And, you know, you lost, as you say, with a game that, you know, certainly has some attention or an asterisk on it because of how it happened. So I think there's a little bit of both in that regard. And yeah, they do still have a lot of young players who aren't paid very highly, and I think that always is a driving force for guys, as you know.
You mentioned the rotation and filling in that gap that was left behind by Blake Snell and Charlie Morton. I've actually had some evaluators tell me that they think one of the best rotations in all of baseball might be in AAA for the Rays, because they feel like that's the caliber of starting pitching they have right in the cusp of the big leagues. What do you see?
I think that you could make a case that there might be some teams like the Pirates or the Rockies or, you know, that tier of major league teams that it might just take right now. Those four or five guys, the Rays would have a AAA. There won't be AAA for a month or so, but would have a AAA, especially at the salaries they make. But you look at Josh Fleming, Shane McClanahan, Luis Patino, Brett Honeywell looks like he's healthy again. Joe Ryan is a guy who's not on the 40-man roster yet. There's probably a couple more that I'm skipping there, but those arms right there. I mean, when Nick Anderson got hurt, I actually thought the Rays might just say, forget this starter Shane McClanahan thing. He could be Josh Hader. Bring him to the big leagues now as a multi-inning reliever. And they've held off on that so far. But there really are some special arms. And that's what I was saying before. They just have to try to figure out how to bridge the gap. How much can you get out of Rich Hill? How much will you get out of Chris Archer? How much can you get out of Colin McHugh, who's coming in? How much can you get out of Michael Wacha, who's looked really good this spring but coming off a down year? You know, can those guys get him till May? Can they get him till June? And then you start using these young guys if and when you need them.
The Rays always have players emerge because they're so good at development and they're so good at helping players maximize their talent. Who are some guys in your eyes this year that could be, and I know Nick Anderson's first success wasn't with the Rays, but I think casual baseball fans became aware of him after he joined the Rays. Who's going to be that guy potentially for them?
You know, it's weird because the position player group is pretty much intact. I mean, Francisco Mejia, the catcher, is the only new position player, I think, from the group they have. And this guy doesn't fit your category as young, but they're very excited that Yoshi Tsutsugo is going to be a much better player this year than he was last year, who came over from Japan. As far as guys coming up, I mean, they're really high on their position player group. They've got four guys on the 40-man roster, none of them, you know, on the big league roster right now. Taylor Walls is maybe, put it this way, Wander Franco gets all the attention as the best infield prospect in probably all of baseball. Taylor Walls might be the best infield prospect defensively in the Rays organization. So they've got some other really good guys that, you know, we will probably see at some point in the big league level this year. But the depth they have, we were trying to do a list the other day of all the middle infield prospects they have, Buster. It didn't fit like on one sheet of paper.
Jeez. Give me a projection for wins for this team, because I feel like as we're having this conversation, count me among those who believe that over 162 games, the Yankees offense, the depth, the ability to make deals leading up the trade deadline could separate them in the American League East from the other teams. But I still feel like the Rays have been incredibly underrated when I see some of the conversation about what could happen in the American League.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of those over-under projections that have the Rays like 84, 85 wins. That just seems way low. And look, they get to play Baltimore a lot. They get to play the Red Sox a lot, as do the Yankees. But that's going to help. I would think they're in that 90-win range again, as they have been the last few years. And sure, the Yankees have the money to cover up for things that go wrong. The Rays don't, but they have creativity and the best farm system in baseball.
All right, Mark. Thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
All right, man. Thanks again for having me. See you down the road.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a fine opening day. And don't forget, bevy of opening day games on ESPN. You got Blue Jays at Yankees at 105, Dodgers at Rockies at 410, Mets at Nationals at 709, where Buster will be in a chilly Nationals park. And then the nightcap, Houston at Oakland at 10:07 Eastern time. And of course, you've got Mets at Nationals on ESPN Radio. You can tune in for pregame coverage at 6 p.m. Eastern time.
And one other one, Taylor, I was going to mention too. Yes. We got news that on ESPN2 on Friday night, guess who's going to be on? Jack Leiter.
Oh,
be on. He of course threw a no hitter two starts ago, and then last start he didn't allow any hits. The Commodores, Jack Leiter, are going to be on ESPN2 on Friday night.
Love that. Yeah, if you want to dig deep on some prospects and see who could be the number one overall pick, check that out as well. We've got some bird sounds here from our guy Don Conaway, Mr. Seaway Science.
Wow.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, would you have known, he sent in the note that it was a cardinal. Would you have known it was a cardinal if not for his note?
No, but that is a very familiar bird sound to me, which actually was surprising. I was like, oh, I've heard that my entire life. That's a cardinal. Who knew? Not me.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So he sent that in, but then he also follows up. What do the Phillies have to do to be contenders for the playoffs this season?
To get at least an average major league bullpen. They, of course, had the worst bullpen in all of baseball last year. How different they'll look if they actually get an average performance from Archie Bradley and some of the other guys they brought in.
Next up, we have Andrew DeSalvo at DeSalvotion. He writes in, on days when Ohtani pitches and hits, do you think we'll see the rarely utilized American League double switch and the Angels will move him from pitcher to right field after they bring in a reliever to keep his bat in the lineup?
My instinct is no, but I do wonder as we go along, because it's pretty clear that the Angels are open-minded this year. Ohtani is open-minded in a big game, in a big situation, maybe a key right-handed reliever on the other side looming, that maybe that's something they would think about doing. That'd be pretty cool.
Next up, we have Bob Olin with more of a statement than a question at Robert Olin. He writes, and I'm looking forward to discreetly wrapping a beer in an old batting glove on Thursday, closing my office door and watching Shane Bieber carve up the Tigers after lunch. Cheers to you, sir. He sent in a picture with his makeshift koozie. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Next up and last one for today, we have Max Leibowitz at @M_Leibowitz. He writes in, will you please discuss this on Bleacher Tweets? This whole article is my Bleacher Tweet, and he attached a column from Bill Plaschke saying the 2021 Dodgers will be the greatest team of all time. You agreed with Dave yesterday that they'll win 110 games. Do you agree with Bill Plaschke's bold prediction that they'll be the greatest team ever?
I'm not going to say they're going to be the greatest team ever. I do think that they have a chance to challenge the standards set by the 98 Yankees. They're that deep. They're that good. If they can stay healthy, and if the National League plays out the way we think it is, where you have a lot of sellers and you have a lot of bad teams in National League, I could see the Dodgers absolutely feasting all summer. At the end of the year, then we talk about them maybe being the greatest team of all time.
Long way to go. 162 games up. Enjoy the baseball, everyone. Thanks for writing in #BleacherTweets on Twitter while you're watching those games.
That's it for today. My thanks to Matt, Sarah, Mark, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.